the grade cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a grade cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the grade cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. Well, we've done it. All roads leads to Manus Labuschagne. He's on the podcast and I've started with a pun because I can't speak because the tour has ended me. My name's Ian Higgins and I'm joined by Sam Perry in Melbourne. Good evening to you, Pez. Exciting times. The Ashes are heating up.
Super exciting times, Higgos. I quite like the husk in your voice. It's very kind of FBI radio 94.5. It's a sort of deep Sydney reference from maybe a decade ago. But
it's a sex man,
great to be with you. Obviously, we've gone back-to-back with a podcast. It was Dave last night. We're at sixes and sevens post this tour. Mm-hmm. Let's not be too self-referential about it. But the fact is that, you know, the ICC schedule dictates that these are back-to-back tests. So it's, you know, a very tight review of Lords. And now we're previewing Headingley. Mm. The series is alive, Higgos. And, like, let's be real, like, it was alive at the start. It's an Ashes series away from home, but there was this kind of hangover from the World Cup, particularly from an England standpoint. I mean, when we went over there, again, self-referential, a lot of the journos, a lot of colleagues, a lot of, you know, public, even some, like, sort of players, like ex-players, were noting that they were emotionally strained following the World Cup, and there was just this sense of kind of lethargy over this Ashes series. That's completely eroded now that Jofra Archer has ended Steve Smith for a test and burst onto the scene. All of a sudden, England are awake. You know, they're awake and they're bantering and you see it on the internet. And aren't they witty? So with all that in mind, we can preview Headingley and Australia's chances because, like, they only need to win a game. They need to win one. Feels like a long way to win one without Steve Smith. Mm. But they only need one from the next three, and they retain historically. So there's my opening gambit, Ian.
Mate, in so many parallels with 2005, you know, like, has there ever been a more hotly contested debut than Kevin Peterson, Jofra Archer, 14 years apart? You know, Australia's best player goes down, McGrath, Steve Smith, missing test matches, crucial. Mm. Who's Michael Kasperwitz? I'm not sure just yet.
Yet. Nisa.
Mate, yeah, I think it's fantastic. Yeah, you're completely right that people were sort of saying, well, you guys need to speak about the World Cup more. No, we don't. Mm. Now, the Ashes are alive. They're here. Mm. Three tests to play. England are going to need to win three probably. Unless there's another draw, they win two. I'm now just telling you how maths works. But yeah, yes, mate, you're right. I think Australia has three chances to retain the Ashes, and there hasn't been a better chance to do that in the last 14 years away from home. The last sort of four tours, three, yeah. Two. I don't know how it works.
But like I said, they haven't won since Sale of the Century was on TV.
That's right.
I mean,
mate,
this is the thing. Like the reason why this is important, and a lot of people know this anyway, but like, you know, the great wins in Test cricket these days, the great series wins are always done away from home. You know, it's extremely difficult to win away from home. And Australia hasn't really had a famous away win in Test cricket since, like, India.
No.
04. There have been some wonderful wins, particularly in South Africa.
Yeah.
They went really close against India last year, which was the best Test cricket Australia's played in a really long time. And they played in a really humble way. They adapted the conditions. They got rid of the 140s, short of a length stuff, the chests and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be adopting a similar kind of approach this time around. It's all, you know, skill, not emotion. It's all kind of, we're not going to bounce them out. We're going to get them out by drying up the four balls. We're going to select Peter Siddle over Mitchell Starc, you know, because that suits our English plans and that sort of expertise. But now they've kind of been, they've been Joffred, you know, in the last test, which they saved. And it's going to, I just feel like it's going to prod the ego a little bit with Australia. They're still saying, look, We're gonna stick to our plans. We're gonna use the short ball when we need to, and all that kind of stuff. But I'm sure, you know, in the bowels of that dressing room. Oh. It's kind of, no, where, you know, like, I'm the one who knocks.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And
Heisenberg,
you
know, reference, I like that.
No, I don't get it either. Mm. It'd be interesting to see who they pick.
So Justin Langer is Walter White is what you're saying. I like that, mate. No, I think this is a good thing to touch on here, Pez, because we've sort of spoken about how Justin Langer has, you know, turned this team around, and you rightly say, you know, make the point about Peter Siddle playing over the likes of the four main bowlers. I mean, it was only a year ago when people were saying that, you know, the Australian pace attack was the best attack in the world, plus Nathan Lyon as well, with obviously 350 mm-hmm. Test wickets. Now they're selecting guys that they think can win in the right conditions. But now Archer's just poked the bear because they poked the bear originally as well. And it's like, there's still this thing that I just don't believe that Australia are nice guys. There's like, everyone who is in that team has grown up in the Australian cricket system, which makes you a cunt. That's the entire point of it. That's how we've been good for so long until it stopped working. And then three guys, you know, they carried the sins for 40 years of us being cunts in, you know, in Australian cricket. But like, the guys who were there went through the entire system that made those people the way they are. So like, when I see Justin Langer at a press conference saying like, you know, like not looking at journalists in the eye, not respecting people in any sort of way, but also giving quite, you know, nice answers. It's there. I still see it. It's there. It's like, it's still, it's all part of it. So, the, you know, four, five bowlers, all pace, bounce the fuck out of them. 4-1. They're going to play six tests, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, the great cricketer is now Fox and Friends, so we're proud to announce that we are Sky After Dark of cricket conversation.
Andrew Bolt's coming on the show after this.
Yeah, we definitely haven't returned mentally from whatever happened in the UK. But, it'll be interesting to see whether Australia kind of maintains its disciplined approach. I think it would be a trap for Australia to be lured into trying to win via the alpha road.
I agree.
In England. And it's never really worked for us before, except when we had Warne and McGrath, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they have to stick with what they're doing. But it'd be interesting to see what 11 they go with. I mean, as we go to air, it's, you know, we don't even know the 12 yet. We don't know whether it's again, down to the bowlers. We don't know whether Siddle's going to get a rest. We don't know, if so, whether that means Pattinson or Stark. I've seen in some quarters even Nessa has been suggested as someone who might work. I heard a couple of journalists say that he looks the quickest in the nets. Or is it that or a heavy ball? whatever the hell that means. But, do you have a view on that, Higos? I mean, from my point of view, in terms of the quicks, it's hard to go past Cummins and Hazelwood after Hazelwood's performance at Lords. Apparently the deck is like the fifth quickest in England according to Crickfears, but then Langer says he expects it to be slow, and it's been slow in first class cricket. But just in terms of the quicks, like I would line it up as like Cummins and Hazelwood and then either Pattinson or Stark. And I think if Pattinson's fully fit, then he gets the nod. But if he's not, then unleash Stark, I'd say.
I wouldn't be surprised, mate, if Stark doesn't play in this Ashes. And that means that he'll definitely be batting three in this test match and take the new ball as well.
And captaining.
Well, he is going to be captain. He'll be put into a leadership role, and I for one, welcome that. But, yeah, I mean, Stark's an interesting one because he's such a confidence bowler. And, I mean, for me, it'd be like how he's bowling the nets, which is goes against everything that I say, that you can't pick guys but how they bowl the nets. But, like, England are so scared of Stark because what he did in the World Cup, and he's obviously got a great record and he is a very attacking bowler, but on a slower wicket, which is what Langer seems to be suggesting it's going to be, a bit more like Lords. I don't know, but, I mean, geez, Archer found a bit of pace in Lords wicket as well. So, yeah, mate, I'm not so sure about Stark because I think he'll bleed a few more runs. I think Siddle's been doing a fine job. You know, England didn't win Lords. It felt like they did. But going into the last day, Australia, it was either going to be Australia win or draw, realistically. I mean, Stokes batted amazingly. And as it turned out, England were only 4 wickets away. But, I mean, Australia ahead in the series in not only the scoreline, but I think just generally. I mean, To answer your question, who's going to bowl? I've got no idea.
Who'd you have, though?
Hazelwood, Siddle, Cummins, Lyon. I'm going to pick the same team.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, okay.
I think that's what it's going to be. Yeah, I can't see Pattinson coming in or Stark, but I mean, the only thing, Stark would come in for just for fear factor, just for wickets, more attacking bowling, I'm not sure, but I don't think we necessarily need to worry about bowling England out. I mean, we took, 15 wickets in a day and a half in, you know, bowling to England last test match in Lords, bowled them out twice in the first test, so yeah, I don't know. I don't think a change is necessary.
Yeah, interesting. I'd probably, on the rotation front, I'd give Siddle a rest and
back-to-back tests. Yeah, it's a good point.
And start Pattinson. And I also would do that on the basis that although Australia are ahead and there's a lot of chat about only needing to win one more, you know, or even a draw puts a lot of pressure on England. That, you know, it's one of those you can't defend a lead kind of things. There's still so much cricket to be played, and I think that a guy like James Pattinson, if he gets it right for a couple of spells, he could do enough to give you a great chance of winning a test match.
That's a good
plus
point.
He can bat. So yeah. Anyway, I think if he's fit, he comes in. I think it's kind of, I mean, he would have retained his place post Edge Baston on performance were it not a case of trying to manage his fitness. And
true.
The reason they're managing his fitness is to give himself the best shot of winning these games for Australia. So if he's fit, I'd play.
It's a great point, mate. I think you've won me over there. Mate, just obviously the big talking point, well, I don't know if it's a talking point, Steve Smith isn't playing, which is huge because he has literally been the difference between the two sides so far. Batting has been pretty even across the board. Well, in fact, I'd say England are a front, you know, for 10 guys. And then Australia's captain is just by far the best player in this series. So without him playing, it's going to be huge. You know, Labuschagne, I think, like, to put in the context of what Labuschagne did in that test match, that's the equivalent of fucking James Vince coming in for Root and batting at the Gabba, basically, and doing that. You know, it's just, it's quite remarkable. And just, I mean, we've already recorded the Marnus interview, but when we ask him about that, but just to get the right mindset is amazing. And then to face Archer under those conditions, I mean, I know you and Dave spoke about this really eloquently last night and last night's show, but it's pretty impressive to have that guy in your squad. And I've come full circle. I'm all aboard Marnus Labuschagne. He's going to take 3 wickets as well, roll out his leggies, couple of runs. But I think realistically, Khawaja's probably playing for his spot in this game because he looks terrible in England. I think he averages like 9 in England. It's very low. For a guy who averages like 42 in Test cricket, to average that low in England, and he doesn't look like scoring a run either.
Khawaja's on his third tour and he's made 150.
It's grim, isn't it?
So I thought he batted well in the second innings at Edgbaston. I think he's shown some evidence of some fluency, which I guess you'd expect.
Man, he's a good player.
I mean, this is huge. This is huge for Warner and Khawaja especially. And I guess all of the talk now is that Warner has to just go out and flail, because if you're going to get a single-digit score poking around, you may as well try and hit a few boundaries while you're at it and see if you can actually take somebody down and find, you know, hit his way into a groove. I've got no idea. I have a bit of sympathy for getting out for very low scores as an opening batsman in England playing against, you know, preeminent seamers that they have there. I think it can happen. I think it can happen 4 times in a row, but probably not too many more for David Warner. I'd imagine that he'll have something, like he will come back. He's too good a player not to, and it's not as though he's been worked out in some kind of technical way, at least that we can see. There doesn't seem to be too many patterns to his dismissals. You'd imagine he's able to correct it. And then, as for the rest of the guys, I don't know. I after watching Marnus bat, I think he's as good a shot as anybody of making a big score.
Well, mate,
not just for the toughness, but the technique that he showed against Archer. His lines were good, his tactics were good, and he clearly has a mentality of a guy there's just something like comically magnetic about Marnus. I mean, we've focused in on him a lot because he's just the anti-alpha in so many ways. But, like, every all roads seem to lead to him. all the time. And, you know, he got this opportunity and he took it better than anybody else. There's just something, there's something about him. So I don't know if that's hope, you know, more than reality, but yeah.
There's something about Manus. Oh, mate, that's why I say Khawaja's playing for his spot in the next test, because I imagine Smith is going to be available for Old Trafford, the fourth test.
Yeah.
You know, so I think Labuschagne has already almost done enough to you know, fill in for Khawaja if he doesn't score runs in this test match, because you think, I mean, Wade's already scored 100 at Edgbaston. Travis Head's look, he got a couple of 50s.
He looks
pretty good. You know, Payne's the captain, so if, you know, there's only one spot really available. I can't see Warner getting dropped this series for Harris. Bancroft is probably the best opening batsman Australia have at the moment, which is concerning. So, I mean, really, you're kind of looking at Manus to come in the middle order, and Khawaja, I think, like Stark, is a real confidence player. And I think if he gets runs once, he gets into a real rhythm, real flow. Even saw that in the UAE. But
well, Khawaja opened the batting in grade cricket 10 to 15 years ago, so I've always just seen him as an opener.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that, you know, if Bancroft struggles, I know they like him at short leg and third slip, and I do appreciate that. But, you know, if his mechanics don't improve, then you could always push Khawaja up to open the batting with Warner and bring Labuschagne in at three. Mm. To me, that actually looks stronger than what it currently is.
Mm. Yeah, it's not a bad shout. Mate, England's are probably going to be... I mean, Anderson was bowling, I think, in some club game in Liverpool yesterday. So he probably will play in Manchester, possibly. The interesting one for them, because, I mean, who do they drop out of their team? Would they even play a spinner? Would the Moeen come back in? I don't know. It's a confusing one.
Well, Moeen's bowling medium pace now, as the viral clips demonstrate.
That's right.
God, oh, man, as a yips... as someone who experienced the yips as a leg spinner who then would occasionally bowl medium pace, I just know how that poor bloke feels. But then again, I don't know what it's like to bowl a half tracker and have one viral clip go around the universe. So
that
maybe I don't fully know how it feels.
That is the only difference between 2005 and this Ashes series in 2019, that Twitter doesn't exist and GIFs weren't created just yet. mate, what else? Well, one thing that has happened between these two test matches, one and two, is that all of a sudden there's like some real internet wars going on, and it's really grim. It's a really grim time to be a fan of sport when two people are just yelling at each other on the internet. I don't really know who they're talking to, but then like Vegemite's getting involved, Marmite's then chiming in. It's a whole thing. I don't know. I blame Trump.
Yeah, and it goes both ways. Like the latest one that I've seen that just it just leaves you feeling nothing but grim. Here goes is the. There's a few pieces coming out now from like unnamed, you know, staff writers at online publications in Australia, you know, highlighting that like England fast tracked the rules to get Jofra Archer involved. And it's just such a like, it's such a lame, lazy little like dog whistle, you know, to people that England have kind of bent the rules. Like if you followed cricket in any way, with any kind of scrutiny in the last couple of years, you're aware that Jofra Archer was being fast-tracked. You know, this was happening, and you just do it, and like it's fine. But then like, and you get the standard like barbecue land Aussies jumping on that, saying, "Oh, you know, England doing what they always do." But then you get the return fire from people who should know better as well, like moralizing with their superior intellect over Australians as well and pointing different things out. And it's just like, it's just a lame, a lame exchange between, and it's keyboard warriorism at its best. And they're all based on straw men. Like, Jofra Archer's playing, it's awesome. Leave it, you know? And it goes the other way as well. You know, the false moralizing over Steve Smith, making sure that his safety was looked after, you know, when really what people wanted was to make sure that he missed the Leeds test, you know, the Headingley test.
So many people are getting it wrong when, like, people just, like, get passionate and they go on the internet. You know, if you're going to do that, have a glass of red, you know, at least be a little bit funny about it. Exactly. Mate, like, I posted a tweet, a personal one, the other day, just making an observation that England are now... just doing what Australia did for years and just being cunts now, and like they're now Australia, and I blame climate change. Obviously a joke, then just like it got tweeted by someone that put it into the mainstream, and then like their comment section was just people being xenophobic, and it's like, who the fuck are you talking to? And it's just like, it's just an excuse. It's like, oh, Labour Shane was born in South Africa and Steve O'Keefe was Malaysian. It's like, who gives a fuck? I don't care if fucking Jofra Archer's a, I don't care if he's a president of fucking Barbados. He's awesome. And we get to watch him in the Ashes. It's incredible. I don't care. Like, it's just good. It's just amazing to watch the best players playing like the most important series that every other Test nation wishes that they played in. But also the funny thing is we're complaining about it now, but I know for a fact that like I'm talking to an audience who also just agrees. I think for the most part our audience isn't the idiots who like who boo players and they find that kind of embarrassing. So but you know, I don't know.
We moralise over the booing and it's like, yeah, but we would do the same thing because like every country just has dickheads. you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then, you know, the, you know, he or she who shouts the loudest tends to kind of own the most space. I'm not agreeing with Scott Morrison's quiet Australians thing. That also is quite grim and very manipulative in its own way. But yeah, it's starting to heat up. You know, this stuff's starting to heat up and it's grim to watch. And what I'll do is I'll check it 18 times a day and think about things to write back and then I won't.
That's right, mate. Well, I mean, if there's nothing else, it shows that people care. And, you know, in an era where, you know, cricket might be a little bit on the way and we're trying to find new ways to make it interesting for, you know, people, maybe this is the way. And names and numbers on the back of shirts might not be. I don't have anything else to say, Pez, ahead of this test match, other than I'm really looking forward to it. I think England are probably going to win. But that makes it 1-1 with two to play. And that's also really bloody exciting. But also Australia, what it comes down to, have three chances to retain the Ashes, essentially, and that's incredible. And who would have predicted that before, you know, as I said, about a month ago or whatever. Mate, I need to drink some herbal tea before the listeners complain about my husky voice. You can also hear it on the sex line, obviously. Just get me on the internet. Anything else, Pez, or should we get Marnus on the phone? Speaking of sex lines.
Just finally, as we sat on a high horse from the ivory tower commenting on people's internet grimness, it wouldn't have sketched many people that we have also dished plenty of that out in our time. So I guess we're saying is when we do it, it's okay.
That's right.
But not anybody else.
That's right. That's right. Glad it's cleared up. All right, Marnus Labuschagne on the phone coming up.
Well, he goes, in the words of David Letterman, our next guest needs no introduction, except that he does, because he's a character that deeply fascinates this enterprise that is the great cricketer. Not only is a zealous man of kit, once telling Peter Lawler, I love bats, I love gear, I love talking bats, fine details, changes, handle shapes, how the bat taps, the length of the blade, and so on. He is also the owner of one of the most epic innings in modern Australian cricket after seeing off Jofra Archer a few days ago at Lord's and effectively single-handedly saving Australia in the fourth innings. As we've been saying since last summer, all roads lead to Marnus Labuschagne, and it's our great privilege to have him join us today on the line from the Australian Team Hotel in Leeds. Marnus, a big welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast.
Thank you, boys. It's a pleasure to sort of be a part of it, and exciting times.
I like how you said sort of.
sort of.
That's right, and that's fair. Marnus, you strike me as a man in touch with your roots. What's your grade cricket story?
My grade cricket story? Well, I've played for Redlands, which is a club. If this is what you want me to talk about, is that correct?
We'll get straight into the international stuff shortly. Cricket. But just pretend that you care about great cricket.
My great cricket club is Redlands. No, I love great cricket, mate. I actually generally do. I was actually talking about club cricket selections to my club captain, like who's one of my really close mates, for the first round of great cricket coming up. So...
Sorry, can I stop you there, Marnus? Like, so you've just played one of the most important innings for Australia in decades, and your club captain said, like, mate, who's going to bat four for Redlands on the weekend? Is that what's happened?
No, well, I've actually gone to him, so it's actually the other way, because we're just talking, because he's one of my really good mates. He's one of my really good...
Let's actually just strip that back a little bit. Yeah, where were you when this happened? Like, were you in the team hotel? Are you at training? And... what happens? Like, do you just have a thought and just go, look, I'm going to go to the skipper? with this idea while I'm in my Australian kit, sort of preparing for this epic Ashes match. Is that can you just sort of set the scene, like illustrate it a little bit?
No, it's more just in the hotel. Yeah, like I said, he was the MC at my wedding, and yeah, he's one of my really good mates, and I always give him a call, or and you know, we just have a chat and talk about you know some of the players that are at the club, because I coach a few of the kids at the club, a few of the guys, and yeah, just talking about, you know, what's happening with the team, and obviously round one's coming up in I think a couple of weeks. So a couple of trial games. We had a trial game. Redlands had a trial game on the weekend. Yeah, so just talking about what we're thinking and who's in, who's out, what's the ins and outs. I'm not obviously there, so.
I know you can't really divulge for the Redlands listeners, you know, out there, but like, what was the advice? Sort of you got to bring through a young bloke and an old bloke's got to go? I mean, you've obviously got a whole bunch of credibility now that you're an Australian player. So what you say goes. Was it some harsh advice?
No, not much advice. It was more just talking about what does the team look like, really. Exactly what you're saying. We've got a few really good young players at our club. That are sort of in that 19s Queensland stuff, that we'd love to be getting into our first grade team. Obviously, just how we're going to fit them in and where they're going to bat and whatnot. So just a bit of bants.
Yeah, and at the same time, is he giving you advice for the Australian team? Like, I'm not sure about Siddle, like we should bring Starkey in maybe. Is he sort of giving it back to you as well?
Oh, definitely. There's definitely some banter there. Obviously, you know, if you're good mates, there's always just, you know, a bit of to and fro. But not too much. Not too much. But yeah, I've definitely sent me a few pictures of me getting hit in the head. So he's loving it.
Well, that's a nice segue. That's great that your mates just send you pictures of you getting smashed in the grill and stuff. But I mean, as we speak to you, there's sort of reports coming through the wire in Australia. And it is a wire, it's not the internet, that you got littered again today. I mean, like, the Ashes, and this is at training, like, the Ashes has just absolutely exploded into this, like epic, hostile kind of series now, and you're right in the centre of it. Like, I mean, how's it feeling to be part of it and also to be littered by both English and Australian players?
you're right. It's great for the game, I think. It's great for cricket. It's great for Ashes cricket because it's really shown, you know, how good Test cricket actually is. I think, you know, even playing in a three-day game, essentially, at Lords, it went down to the wire. It was a nail-biting finish and it was, it's good for the game. And I think it's amazing to see Test cricket sort of in that stature again. Because I think it's showing you the really good challenge between bat and ball. I think both teams here are very evenly matched. Both got really good bowling attacks. Both got good batting attacks. So it's a real challenge. And I think, you know, it's just, you know, who's performing better on the day.
Mate, tell us about the Lords experience. I mean, you're the first concussion substitute. You're the first like-for-like for Steve Smith, which has got to be a nice compliment as well. And, you know, you managed to play an innings to save the match for Australia. I mean, can you describe what it's like just having Jofra Archer come in to bowl at you in those circumstances? I mean, what are you thinking? What are you feeling through that?
Well, I mean, I take it to the morning. Obviously, I was it was a pretty intense morning, if I'm going to be honest. We were actually down there at about 8:30 at the Nets, having a training session, and obviously the guys that aren't playing were having a proper net session. The wickets were pretty undercover, a bit juicier that morning, and you have Pattinson, Stark, and Nessa steaming in with at least in the morning you go there and you're on. Because it's not like you're facing, you know, some medium paces. You get bumped in the nets by some pretty quick bowling. So it got me going. And then Payne obviously came over and he said, "Look, mate, I think you're gonna play." And it was actually started raining probably 20 minutes after that. So went back up, sort of just chilled out. And it didn't really become real. Obviously, walks on the field, fielded, and then it was a little bit surreal, really, when you walk out and you're like, I'm just come out to bat here from the fourth innings. You know, 2 days ago, I was, you know, you're just chilling out, you're running the drinks, you know, making sure the boys are ready, and then you're in the game. So, you know, it's a good, you know, you've got to be ready for whenever the opportunity comes. And, you know, it was exciting, obviously, you know, facing up their first ball. Obviously, it becomes real, like, when you're not batting, it's probably, like, you're probably thinking more, where when you're batting, you're not really thinking about, you know, when you're facing someone that bowls fast, you're not really thinking much. It's just more reaction. You're trying to watch the ball as hard as you can and go from there.
And, Manus, like, you got hit by Jofra in the second ball. I think Jeff Lemon said you bounced back up like a cartoon character under an anvil, which was kind of cool to watch at about 3 a.m. here in Australia. Did the English guy say anything to you? You know, like what's the kind of tone of what they're saying to you out in the middle in that kind of crucial moment, not just after you get hit, but around there? I mean, what's are they talking a lot at you? And if so, what are they saying?
No, I mean, obviously when I got a kid, they were very, like, you know, obviously scurried around me to make sure I'm all right. And I was kind of just trying to act cool and, like, go, yeah, I'm good, like, scratching my mark and making sure, you know, I go through my little routine and whatnot. And they're all kind of like, mate, you're right. And I'm like, yeah, mate, I'm cool. You got me in the grill, I'm all good. And then you obviously know the process, the doc comes on and it's a bit of a, you know, got to make sure, you know, go through all the checks. The worst part is I had to change my helmet. Hate changing my helmet. Real, like, God, you know, I cut my helmet to, like, there's different parts that I cut out because I've got a bit of a weird shaped head. So I make sure my helmet fits properly. And then obviously change my helmet. Then, yeah, you're back on, you're ready to go.
Mate, how hard is it to actually, like, focus on batting in a test match when, like, you've said that you obviously come into the game as a substitute, I suppose, and you're having a net in the warm-up in the morning before you're about to have a hit in a test match at Lord's of all places in a, you know, critical test match. And then, you know, as you said, Tim Payne comes over, he says you're going to play, then it's raining, you field for a bit, you're coming out, there's pressure. Like, that is such a hard thing to try and focus on actually batting. Like, do you think that maybe, like, the second ball that got you was almost a good wake-up call to sort of get you going in your innings?
100%, 100%, it definitely was. You know, obviously, when you get hit by, you know, 150k ball, you wake up pretty quickly.
Yeah, I've always found that myself, yeah.
So, you're sort of up and about, and then I think in some ways it helps because, you know, you obviously don't have time to overthink it. You're just kind of going out, you're ready, you're prepared, and you're going out and playing what's in front of you. You're not really trying to think too much about anything else. You're just trying to play with, you know, stuff that you've worked with. All of a sudden, all that goes out the window and you're just trying to focus on that ball and making sure you're ready for the contest.
Can I ask you, like a bit of a left field one, Manus? You're saying how surreal it was to be batting at Lord's, the home of cricket, as a, you know, concussion substitute in this, like, extremely critical moment in the Ashes series. I mean, my view is your innings will be decisive in the final scheme of things when it comes to the retention of the Ashes for Australia. But like, what what's the, like, weirdest thought you had while you were batting? You know, we have weird thoughts when we're batting, like, you know, like, oh, my missus didn't call me back or something, or, oh, where's the circus tonight? Like, were you that focused? Like, every single thought you had was kind of pre-planned, or, like, did you find yourself thinking about, you know, some strange stuff? And if so, what was it? Declare it publicly.
I mean, you're not really thinking of straight. Like, when I'm out there, you know, when I'm not facing up, I'm sort of just, my mind's sort of just drifting off. I can't even remember what I was thinking. But then you're sort of just looking at the field and going, right, oh, where's the, you know, where do I want to hit the ball? Where's the gaps? Where's the, you know, what's he trying to do? So you just, you know, your mind sort of spins more, for me personally, is more around, like, the game stuff and you know, where's the runs, what are they trying to do, where am I batting and stuff like that. So No, not really any strange thoughts. Sometimes I get in a little bubble when I'm out there as well. Like, you just find yourself, like you know, you just find yourself sort of just like, you don't even know what you're doing. You're sort of just floating around, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, like, I've got to face up here. Mm. Like, you know, like, making sure you're nice and clear for the next ball.
Mm. Mm. When you're out there, obviously your dismissal caused some controversy, Marnus, when, like, I mean, we celebrated this on the podcast the other night, you know, Joe Root claiming one of the all-time great claimants by claiming the one-hand, one-bouncer rule. I mean, that must be a weird thing where, like, you know, the captain of England claims it, and then you're looking at the big screen, and you see it bounces. Like, it bounced. Like, let's call a spade, bounced. And then you still get given out. Like, that must be a weird thing and sort of hard to take in a pretty pivotal moment in the match, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it was frustrating, obviously, you know, hitting the ball into short leg and it popping up. And yeah. And obviously, originally when I got caught, I was more just like standing in the middle of the thing, just sort of in disbelief. I was just like, how did that hit his knee and popped up? Like, seriously. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, obviously, I started walking off and then they said the review and I stood there and obviously I saw it on the big screen and I was like, oh, well, to me, it looked like it bounced. So I was walking back, and I was like, well, that's bounced. Like, for me, on the screen, I was like, it looked like it bounced. And like I said, I got nothing, sorry, against Joe. You know, obviously, I know as a fielder, sometimes you catch the ball, and, you know, you're 100% sure that your fingers were under it. But obviously, with technology now, there's such close-ups of the hands and the ball, and so you do sometimes go, well, I caught it, but I felt like I caught it, but, you know, maybe I didn't. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, like I said, it's not really my decision to make out there. And it's obviously frustrating. You know, it's obviously made it easier that, you know, we still draw the game. And you know, it's frustrating. Obviously, we had our lower order put under pressure at a crucial stage instead of sort of maybe shaking hands with 10-7 overs to go. So, So, I mean, like I said, at the end of the day, it didn't affect the situation of the game. But it, like you said, it's nothing, not necessarily Joe's fault. It's just, you know, it's just a matter of opinion, isn't it? And I think because the soft signal was out, it meant that they were going to sort of stick with the umpire's decision.
Mm. Mate, I think that's a pretty generous explanation as well, you know, for those people out there, and it all makes a lot of sense. Like, just heading into Headingley, which obviously kicks off in 24 hours as we go to air, there's been a little bit of talk about whether Australia's going to, you know, enter into a bouncer war. Now that, you know, it's really weird for us to be on the receiving end of, like, you know, having a hostile, intimidating bowler that kind of frightens, the public. It's normally us that's doing that. And this, you know, we always have to have the alpha reflex in Australia and go back harder at them. But, you know, JL, my mate JL, has come out and said, no, we want to win on skill, not emotion. I mean, what's it like inside the dressing room there? I mean, there must be some, you know, big throbbing blokes out there, you know, in the Aussie side who want to kind of go back at England in the way that Jofra has, you know, like, I mean, guys like Jimmy Pattinson and Stark, whoever's going to play, must want to kind of, you know, return fire with fire.
And how are the leggies coming out?
well, I'll go with the first one first. Like I said, I think the short ball is definitely going to be a part for the rest of this series. There's no doubt in that. But I mean, it's how it's used, and you know, like you said, we want to make sure we're using it to get wickets, you know, not just to pin guys. You know, because like you said, the aim is to get wickets, you know, to win the test. That's our goal, to retain the Ashes. It's not to make sure we're hitting helmets and gloves and stuff like that. So that's probably the first thing. And yeah, look, I'm sure that, you know, the quicks are raring, you know, that there might be a few extra Ks when Jofra does come out. There might be a few extra Ks because, like you said, if you know you're going to get them, you might as well dish them out. obviously the leggies, leggies are going well. Obviously, I've been bowling a lot the last few weeks in the Nets and obviously in county cricket. So, it's been good to obviously be able to play a bit more of a role over here in county cricket and getting used to bowling as a main spinner, which has been a really good challenge.
Manasar, we've taken up far more of your time than had originally been agreed, and I really appreciate your generosity in giving that to us one day out from crucial Ashes test. So thank you very much. Thanks very much for just being a wonderful talking point for the grade cricketer for the last 6 months as well, you know, like symbolising the change in Australian cricket, you know, from the hawkish alpha to something a little bit more new age, skillful, and spiritual. So we thank you for that. You've probably got no idea what we're talking about there, which means you're just a normal person who has more important things to do in their life. But so with all that said, Manas, all the best for tomorrow. We'll be watching and cheering you on. This isn't an unbiased journalistic proposition, the grade cricketer. We're absolutely biased. So all the best, mate, and we'll watch on.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Stop talking now.
Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate it. It was great, Tom. It's good to chat with you guys. Great bands, and we'll talk soon.
A long discussion last night, he goes, with Dave about the importance of customization in business in 2019. You know, if you can't customize, then, 2005 called and they want their business models back. But let's have a quick nod to our people at Budgie Smuggler. You know, let's take a different look at this here. Of course, custom smugglers are available to you. You know this if you listen to the show. You go to budgiesmuggler.com. What I want to go at separately here is one of the reasons we like working with Budgie Smuggler is because they are a business that aren't a gambling firm.
There's that.
and you know, as we listen back on this in a couple of years' time when we're sponsored by gambling, 100%. Obviously I'll sound like a hypocrite. But for now, we're proud to be a small little enterprise that so far has resisted the clutches of gambling advertising. Open to others if you want to get in touch. Mm. You know, we definitely like a beer. Mm. But as we're like, this is a moralizing podcast.
What is happening?
Well, I'm just trying to find any angle to talk about Budgie Smuggler. That's not what we've done before. I don't want to talk about Alex Carey and bandages again. Mm. So cool. we're just pumping up this company. It's a good Australian company. It's around the world. And they're great to work with. They're, you know, lovely people. They're normal people.
They are nice people, yeah.
And there are very few normal people around, I think, as, again, get on
that has been our experience. Who's who.
But, yeah, get some swimwear. They're good to get swimwear with. You can get your own picture. You can get their own designed pictures. They're well made. They're ethically made. Budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Hashtag asked TGC Pez. In the interest of not blowing out like I did in the last show in London, Pez, can I invite you to read out the first question?
Invitation accepted, he goes, and thank you for that. I accept cordially at that. This is from Liz Troppington, who's a name that might ring a bell to a few
bells have been
listeners
rung.
Of the great cricketer. And great to have just any kind of correspondence from, you know, someone with an XX chromosome.
Yeah.
Don't know if that's politically incorrect.
Well, as a single man, I'll take anything.
I'm just saying a woman. Hi, guys. Liz Troppington here. Firstly, may I apologise for a typo that caused my friend Zalia to have a hen's party that involved high tea in a boutique hotel followed by a visit to Kew Gardens rather than what I had planned, a booze-fuelled fiesta with the scantily clad TGC boys at the helm. Mm. Only yesterday, on reminiscing that I should be nursing a hangover rather than simply feeling exhausted by all the talk of babies and foreign bonds, I looked back at my previous communique with TGC and realised that I had omitted a letter from my email address. Sure, I've heard that before. Mm. I had thought that you had rebuffed my offer of Chippendale work when, in actual fact, I believe you would have been sending emails to the wrong address. Correct. Okay, so Liz goes on and says, so I write this email to you in apology and also in request of some marriage advice.
Perfect.
My husband Andy, I mean, just for some context here as well, he goes, in case you didn't listen to this podcast in the past, we were invited by Liz to perform as strippers, as niche strippers at a hen's party while in London the day before our big London show, and we really wanted to do it. And then we followed up and got no reply. And now Liz is saying, well, I've got a letter in my email address wrong. So I write in apology and also in request of some marriage advice. My husband Andy, a big fan of your books and podcast, a man who played 3 years of grade cricket in Sydney before returning to local village cricket here in England, seems to be suffering from a crisis of self-esteem, and I would like you to settle some of his internal quandaries by discussing them on your podcast. Mm. That's very kind.
Yeah.
Coming from me, compliments and reassurances don't have the same meaning that they would from you guys, his heroes. Andy is an affable guy, incredibly intelligent, and works a high-level job at one of the world's largest drug companies. When in the company of his cricket friends, many of whom work low-level jobs as labourers or in hospitality, he suffers from a near-constant level of abuse and bullying. He's often demeaned for his body, having lost the tone from chest and arms in the last 2 years. Recently, a couple of said friends visited our house for a barbecue. For several hours, Andy partook in their peculiar form of banter, which mainly involved denigration and belittling of each other. After they had left, Andy explained to me that he was beta to their alpha, mainly because of his subpar rig, inverted commas, and then the parenthesis says, I had only previously heard this word used to describe lorries, close parenthesis. Later in the evening, after I'd settled into our bed alone, I heard Andy come into the bedroom and turn on the light. I looked up at him, naked but for a pair of underpants with this inscription across his waistband, Alpha. As he began to saunter toward the bed with his I'm trying to be sexy eyes locked onto mine, I broke into a fit of laughter, nearly falling out of bed with the force of it. Almost instantly, Andy was in tears, curled up on his side of the bed, his head in his hands. I cradled him in my arms and asked him what on earth he was doing. He explained to me that he had purchased these underpants from a store called Kmart during his grade cricket days in Sydney in an attempt to elevate his social status at the club. He said he was embarrassed by the way his friends had bullied him earlier that day and had simply wanted his wife to see him as a top dog, someone worthy of her affections. I informed him that a man with a wife who loves him, a highly skilled and prosperous job, a house and car to his name should feel confident in his own skin despite being insulted by his friends. Believing his problems to be in need of more support than my compliments and reassurances could offer, I decided that what he needed was some advice from his heroes, the TGC lads. If you agree with my summation, would you be kind enough to reaffirm it on your podcast? If you do not, feel free to say so. And would you kindly give him some advice on looking sexy in the bedroom that does not involve wearing the word alpha on one's waistband? Yours in anticipation, Liz Troppington.
Okay, so Liz is obviously we're being catfished.
Yeah, that's no doubt.
That's obviously.
Is that you, Glenn Maxwell?
I know Dan Brady's words when I see them. Mate. Okay. Let's.
So that's basically the plot of our next book.
Which is available. No. So, okay, mate, a lot going on here. First of all, Liz is just offering the fuck out of Andy in so many ways in this message.
And that's before you cut. Let's just get out of the way. I mean, Liz probably is Andy. There's only one guy here.
True.
This is a made-up story, but let's go on.
He is often demeaned for his body, having lost the tone from chest and arms in the last 2 years. So she has noticed, as I mentioned, of salad. He's being alpha by his friends. He's being belittled. He then tried to have sex with his wife, consensually, and she laughed at him, and he started crying, and then he was...
Almost instantly.
Yes, he got into the little spoon position, and his wife big spooned him to make him feel better.
He curled up on his side of the bed in tears at his laughter. Cradled in his arms.
He shops at Kmart. He wants his wife to see him as a top dog. That's about it. That ticks all the boxes.
What's funny is like, well, there's lots of things that are funny, obviously,
that's
but
true.
Like somebody like Liz, who's so self-aware and so like socially insightful as to what's going on, to then absolutely burn her husband, who she purports to love, by ensuring that this story is read out.
Yes, she purports to.
We're like Netflix. We don't reveal how many people listen to the podcast, but it's tens of thousands. There's a complete contradiction there, which I enjoy, frankly. Firstly, Liz, you're a psychopath.
Firstly,
you're a psychopath. Not only have you invited us to perform at a hen's party and then then claimed that you left one letter wrong on your email. You're now absolutely roasting your husband. Presumably, his name's Andy Troppington.
I think Liz kept her surname. I kid.
I don't think it's a real surname. But to burn the husband like that while being so socially insightful as to what's going on in his mind, if he's clearly this insecure, well, it's the work of a psychopath. But psychopaths always go to the top in any field, and you've gone to the top of Ask DGC questions, Liz. That's probably my favourite one.
Yeah, the leaving one letter off, that's, you know, we've seen up. Do you remember that story I was telling you about how I met that girl on a plane and she gave me a number and it was a whole thing and she left like one digit off?
Yeah,
we've all been there.
Yeah.
Tom.
Well, anyway, we just feel like we need to close this off.
Okay.
What's the advice to Andy? Well, I think that, Andy, you need to firstly evaluate the psychological profile of your wife because you're not actually being supported here.
Yep.
And what you're going through, Andy, is very normal. I think, like, I remember in my uni days in communication, one thing that the professor said was humour is one of the great tools of communication, of persuasion. However, if you're not funny, don't ever try and be funny. And I would apply that to the beta and the alpha discourse.
Sure.
Like, if you're a beta, you are never going to convince anybody that you're alpha.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said last night, the only way to get to alpha from a beta position is to own the beta because then you paradoxically become the alpha. Own the beta, bro, and, you know, work some arms.
Tom says, dear hashtag AskTGC choppers, like many of your listeners, my thoughts last Thursday were solely placed in England for the delivery of the first ball at Edgbaston. Imagine my horror as my wife and mother-in-law, who often stays with us on Thursdays to lend a hand with our two small children, casually mentions during the first over that The Bachelor was on and they were keen to witness the introduction of several new girls to the mansion. Well, fuck me. How does one react in such a scenario? My shrill protests were nonchalantly ignored, and within minutes I had missed both the Warner and Bancroft dismissals, instead enduring the tedious rose ceremony with the same music they've used since Tim Robards' season one. I have cross-sectioned the upcoming test dates with the schedule for The Bachelor, normally an 8-week run at 2 episodes per week on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and found that there will be no less than 7 total evenings of scheduling conflict during the upcoming series. We are not a 2-television household, and I do not want to go down that road, nor am I willing to live stream through any other means. I will only watch cricket in HD on our LG 52-inch flat screen. Unnervingly, my wife tells me that watching Batch is now deemed as a live-only event due to the hilarity of live tweeting and the need to be up to date with her mother's group chat. Therefore, this unprecedented situation creates an impossible choice between my marriage and cricket, unlike Sam Wood's choice between Snezana and Lana in season 3. Boys, you are overseas and you will not be affected, but there is a cohort of us back here who are alarmed at the prospect of missing the boys humiliate England at home for the first time since 2001. I love my wife dearly and know that sacrifices must be made in order for a marriage to be successful. But after the sacking of Edgbaston, I have to say, I am more than a little concerned. For the sake of those across the country whose marriages are at stake, please help. Tom.
Wonderful.
Great.
I mean, like, you know, practically speaking, like, can't Tom's wife cop some, like, device streaming? Obviously, Tom's wife feels the same way about only watching The Bachelor on HD on their LG 52-inch flat screen.
That's right.
I have to say, Tom, you're also prioritising your autistic commitment to watching cricket on LG 52-inch flat screen as well over the marriage and cricket. Like, because as this is being read out, I'm thinking, just watch it on your laptop, get another TV, blah, blah, blah. Like, join 2019 again.
Mm.
But he just says, frankly, you know, like, unequivocally, We are not a two television household, and I do not want to go down that road, nor am I willing to live stream through any other means.
Mate, just like, Tom just loves, he loves The Bachelor. He knows what seasons people are on. He's across it. He's actually enjoying it. It's
That's
okay.
The problem, isn't it?
It's okay to like The Bachelor. Like, it's deliberately mindless, that television. You're supposed to laugh at characters. Now, of course, one of the things that we've pointed out is that we laugh at our own characters in our cricket team. That's why it's so fucking funny.
Because it's reality TV. It's the best reality TV.
You know, we kicked out the most important character, Steve Smith, brought an intruder. We brought a mole into the house, Manus Labuschagne.
Manus the mole.
And we thank him for joining the podcast.
And we do.
But, you know, this is basically a conflict of whose reality TV is more watchable. And there's probably more narrative in an Ashes test match, to be honest. There's probably more
but
going on.
But Tom can't sell that to his wife.
No, because cricket's
boring. I thought you were right. It's really boring. And like,
what about names and numbers?
Like, I thought you were going down the right path when you're sort of saying Tom loves The Bachelor. Maybe Tom just needs to accept the truth that he may actually just like The Bachelor more than cricket.
Yeah.
Like, this is the whole thing with a great cricketer. Like, we have this commitment to this game that started from youth. It may have had something to do with relationships with fathers or family members or identity. And how to get yourself out of how to escape cricket is the great issue within the game. If you find a TV show that happens to make you feel better and it connects you with your wife, it doesn't matter what Australia's going to do in England, just go with that TV show. I haven't found it yet. I'd love to find a Bachelor. You know, I watch the cricket sometimes and I'm like, I'm not sure if I even like this. We talked to a former England player the other day, won't mention his name, Tim Bresnan, and he said, I hate watching cricket, you know. So maybe, Tom, you could cast it like I was a player. You know, I like playing, I really like watching. You'll earn a lot of respect from most of the population for that perspective. And tell me, and if you can get yourself out of cricket, tell me how to do so.
A scapegoat. Hashtag a scapegoat.
I
was going to say, mate, I think it'd be a great question for Dr. Happy. We should get him on. We haven't spoken to him in a while.
Yeah, we should. We've actually had a few requests. Let us know if you want Dr. Happy back on.
Yeah.
That is a trained psychologist that we used to get on to actually deal with a lot of these dysfunctional men's issues. Okay. But wrapped up as jokes, you see, because that's how we communicate.
All right. Well, that's the Leeds Preview podcast done for the great cricketer. Thank you, as ever, for Sam Perry for joining us from Melbourne. Manus Labuschagne from the hotel in Leeds. Who's going to win the Leeds test match? Third test. It's huge and true. Absolutely, boys. I'm going to be watching The Bachelor, to be honest. But let me know how you get on. Let us know if you want Dr. Happy back. We'll see you after the test match.